20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Thursday. Welcome in to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on X at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Quick shout out to Brian Harder for becoming an all-new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube member. Appreciate that, Brian. Hope you are enjoying all the members-only content. Speaking of which, if you are listening to this on Thursday prior to noon Central Time, today is going to be the members-only Q&A, so make sure to check that out. Again, noon Central Time on Thursday. I will post that out on YouTube so you can check that out. Meanwhile, we had an interesting set of news and notes from Wednesday. Nothing crazy, but it was really like a Buffalo Bills-centric day. They went through and cut a ton of players, which was interesting. One player that we had sort of questioned would they get released was a certain Green Bay Packer from a season ago, and that was Rasul Douglas. And despite the Buffalo Bills making a ton of moves and going in a pretty different direction, especially in the defensive backfield where they've already released Micah Hyde, they released Jordan Poyer, Tre'Davious White, the one player that is staying in Buffalo actually is Rasul Douglas. They did come to an agreement on a restructured contract. So if there were any of you out there that were wondering about a Rasul Douglas potential reunion in Green Bay, not going to happen. He is going to stay in Buffalo this upcoming season. I did have somebody ask on Twitter, well, like, why would Rasul Douglas come back to Green Bay? Or why would Green Bay be interested in reuniting with Rasul Douglas when they just traded him away? Well, things have changed. When they traded him away, Green Bay was 2-5. They were stumbling. They had lost four games in a row. They had an extremely difficult schedule coming up. Jordan Love didn't look like the end of season Jordan Love. He was still kind of going through some of the learning pains of being a first-time starting quarterback in the NFL. And Green Bay was not in a great spot. They didn't make the playoffs the season before. Again, sitting at 2-5, four losses in a row. Everything was sort of spiraling out of control a little bit. And it wasn't until after Rasul Douglas got traded, which was just happenstance, that Green Bay turned everything around and ultimately ended up probably what, like a quarter short of going to the NFC Championship game. Meanwhile, things did not go according to plan in Buffalo. And maybe most importantly, is Green Bay has a new defense that would actually fit Rasul Douglas pretty perfectly. But alas, he is not set to become a Green Bay Packer again. I doubt it would have happened. That would have been a pretty quick reconciliation for all of a sudden, again, them to trade him away last trade deadline and then him to be back after a release from Buffalo. Didn't necessarily see it happening, but it wasn't out of the realm of possibility entirely up until the Bills did come to a contract agreement and restructure with him. And as I mentioned, he will be a Buffalo Bill. However, I did mention one name that they did release, and that is Jordan Poyer. Interesting name, mostly due to the fact that Jordan Poyer did play with the Cleveland Browns, if you remember. You also remember Jeff Hafley was a defensive backs coach with the Cleveland Browns. And if you want to put two and two together, yes, they did work together in Cleveland in 2014 and in 2015 when Hafley was the defensive backs coach. Poyer was a corner, if memory serves, at that time. That's what they drafted him as. I don't think that they moved him to safety until he got to Buffalo, but I could be misremembering on that. Either way, they worked together in Cleveland, and there is some familiarity there. Whether or not Green Bay would go in that direction probably remains to be seen. I don't think it's a perfect fit. He, just to kind of go through a quick rundown here with Poyer, had a 67.2 grade from PFF this past season, played more box safety in 2023. That was actually his primary position per PFF this past season. That wasn't usually the case with Jordan Poyer. I do think he's a capable player at just about anything. If you want to play him a little in the slot, you can. If you want to play him a little bit in single high, two high safeties, box safety, he's just that type of player. He can do a little bit of everything. He has seen a little bit of a decline. He was a first team All-Pro in 2021, a Pro Bowler in 2022, but he will be 33 in 2024. He is getting up there in age, clearly a little bit older, doesn't have that same level of athleticism that he once did, although he wasn't ever like a super athlete. He's sort of won on technique and effort and all the intangible stuff, and then he was still a good athlete. But this would be an interesting signing. And two things I want to discuss here. One, I think you probably are with Poyer in a similar situation with like a Tashaun Gibson, even though Poyer is better at this point, is that you're probably going through a first couple waves of free agency and seeing where your safety room is at, maybe even getting through the draft to see where your safety room is at before you probably go aggressively in that direction, especially with a player that's 33 years old. They're going to be 33 in 2024. And then that kind of brings me to a broader question is, where should Green Bay be at with signing players, you know, over 31, 32, 33 years old? To be clear, there's nothing wrong with that. If a player is a good player, screw whatever their age is. I'm not saying, well, they're over 30, so avoid. That would be dumb. That'd be taking part of your talent pool away and just saying, we're not going to use those guys at all when there can be talented players out there within that range. But more often than not, isn't always the case, but more often than not, when you're signing 30 plus year old players, you are signing them on 1 year mercenary type deals. It's a 1 year deal. Can you come and help us win right now? And then we'll see what happens going into next year if we want to bring you back the following year. And sometimes you might see it as a 2 or 3 year deal in writing. The agent wants to see 3 years, you know, $30 million on the contract, but really it's like a 1 year, you know, $8 million deal or something like that. That's fine. That's not a big deal. But do you really want to, if you're Green Bay at this point with this team being as young as they are, start doing the 1 year mercenary deals for a decent amount of money? Or would you prefer that they kind of keep this young core and nucleus together? And if you're going to look to add players, maybe you look to add some of the 25, 26, 27 year olds that can actually be on legitimate 2, 3, 4 year deals so that they can help you through the entirety of what hopefully is an open window for the foreseeable future. And that's where I am a little bit more. I would like to see them probably focus a little bit more on some of those younger players that fit within the locker room that are going to be able to come in and not just have success in 2024, but in 2025, 2026, maybe even 2027. That's what I would be looking for more. I think if you start getting into this, well, let's go and sign a bunch of, you know, mercenaries and, you know, veteran players, you could potentially upset the locker room a little bit with just a different dynamic of older veteran players coming in. You can get through that. And as a coach, you just need to be able to navigate some of that stuff. So that's not the be all end all. But, you know, I do wonder if, again, you probably just want to keep a team that's sort of on this same path right now on that same path. And how I kind of look at it is, and I've gone through this throughout the course of this week. We just talked about it with Jordan Poyer, talked about it with Tashawn Gibson. I think I talked about it. I forget which linebacker it was. I don't think it was Bobby Wagner, but maybe it was a Jordan Hicks. It might have been him. Either way, there are these players in free agency that I think you go through the first level of free agency and see, hey, can we get some of these big name players, or not even necessarily big name, but younger players, maybe 3, 4 year deal, probably in that mid to high tier of free agency. Maybe you get a couple, maybe you don't. But then the next step is, all right, can we go to the draft? And in the draft, can we address some of these positions and maybe go young like they did with wide receiver or tight end a season ago and hope that they can fill those spots with young, up and coming, talented players? And then if all of a sudden you get to, you know, mini camp time or even training camp time and you don't feel satisfied with a position the way that it is, that's when you start looking at some of these players. Wasn't the same from an age standpoint, but remember Devondre Campbell, when they first signed him, that, if I remember correctly, was like a mini camp or an OTA. It may have even been a little bit later than that, but they looked down at their roster and they said, we have a hole at this spot. And they looked at what was left in free agency. They saw Devondre Campbell, they picked him up and he filled the spot and ended up playing fantastic football for a couple of years for them. That could be a situation where they look for those younger, maybe more talented, you know, players who can maybe help for a few seasons in that first couple waves of free agency, go through the draft. And then if they get to that, you know, after the draft and there's some, you know, holes still in the roster, that's when you look at a Jordan Poyer or a Jordan Hicks or a Micah Hyde or a Tashawn Gibson, and maybe a player that, yeah, we're probably not going to sign this player long-term, but they could come out and they could help us right now win football games and try to get into a situation where it doesn't necessarily matter about 2025, 2026. They're just here to win football games right now. And at some point, you just need to look at those type of players. But the bigger point here is those guys will probably be there at the end of the process. You don't need to go hunting for the 34-year-old safeties in all likelihood at this point of free agency. See if you can maybe get a little bit better, a little bit younger, a little bit more fast and athletic. And if not, those guys, at least a handful of them, are likely to be there still as you start heading into OTA and mini camp time and sort of that final wave of free agency, and Green Bay has addressed players at that spot in free agency on numerous occasions in the past. All right, that does it for news and notes from Wednesday. What we are doing today is trying to build the perfect offseason for the Green Bay Packers. The good news is that one of those things already happened. They moved on from Joe Barry and went with a new defensive coordinator. That was a huge, huge step in this offseason. And they replaced a lot of the coaches with what seems like a pretty energetic and talented group of coaches all throughout this roster and a coaching staff, I should say. And that's pretty exciting. But I want to go through and kind of simulate out the remainder of this offseason and go through what I think would be an almost perfect blueprint for the remainder of this offseason, which includes having to release some players, restructure some players, re-sign some players, sign some free agents, go through a draft, address the Jordan Love contract, round out your roster, and finally put together that final 53. So we're going to try to do that over the course of the next 15 or 20 minutes, whatever it might take. But let's just put this in very easy ways. Here's how you ultimately do it. You sign Xavier McKinney, you trade for Legarius Sneed, you bring back David Bakhtiari and he's completely healthy for the season. You draft Marvin Harrison Jr. You trade Royce Newman for 3 first round picks. If you haven't caught by now, I'm being very facetious. My point here is to not, you know, sort of fan fiction this and put this beautiful bow on what could be this incredible offseason. That's not what we're trying to do here. Of course, we want to live within a realm of reality. We could all build out a beautiful, perfect future that's never going to happen in a million years, but that doesn't do anyone any good. So just remember as we're going through this today that it does have to at least somewhat exist in the realm of possibility. Am I going to get everything right today? Am I going to nail all 11 of the draft picks, every free agent signing, every release and contract restructure that Green Bay is going to do? No. Also, great news for you, I am not the GM of the team. So if you disagree with some of the things that we go through today, that's fine. And the big thing to remember here is although we're trying to build a perfect offseason and a perfect blueprint, that does not exist. There's always going to be some mistakes. There's always going to be some hits. And it's very difficult to navigate any offseason and get everything right. It just doesn't happen. So just remember that as you're commenting below with how did you take this, you know, offensive lineman in the 6th round when this guy could have been available. I am sorry in advance, but let's have fun with this. Let's go through it. I do think there are still 3 releases that need to get done if you do want to be able to do some free agent signing and just to sort of shore up the remainder of this roster with a couple of those releases. We've talked about David Bakhtiari. It is still the most likely decision. If you are building a perfect offseason and you want to live in a world in which Green Bay and David Bakhtiari come to a contract agreement and he's back in Green Bay on a minimum deal with a lot of incentives and he comes back and he plays at a high level and plays some great football at left tackle for Green Bay, I am all in. If they can figure out a way to make that happen, that is great. That is awesome. I've seen some people post, hey, listen, if Green Bay could have released him by now, or like if they wanted to, they would have. They could have, and they haven't yet. So what gives? They clearly must be working on something. I do think that Brian is trying to keep his options open, but I think it's far more likely that if they didn't come to a contract agreement by now, a restructured contract, it probably just means that Green Bay is ultimately going to release him unless they figure out something at the very last minute. But I think this is coming sooner rather than later. And unfortunately, as much as it sucks to say, we're probably looking at the last handful of days, last few days, last handful of hours, who knows at this point, of the David Bakhtiari era in Green Bay. I would love to be wrong. I would love to see him out on the football field this year, but that is likely the scenario to save a ton of money. I went through a whole Bakhtiari situation and scenario, if you want to look that up on YouTube or the audio podcast, and explained everything in painstaking detail if you want to know all about that contract and how it works. It's called the David Bakhtiari decision. So you can go search that if you want. But ultimately, this ends in a release for David Bakhtiari. Royce Newman released. He got a bump in pay based on playtime incentives that just makes it not really attainable to keep him on the roster with where he's at. So I think that makes a very logical release. Let's be real. Even if he was on a vet minimum deal, it's probably time to move on from Royce Newman. There has not been improvement there, but we'll just leave that right now. And then Devondre Campbell. I do believe there is enough savings there with Devondre to make this move to go in a different direction with a new defense and just sort of separate where Devondre has sort of been and kind of just go in a different direction. I think that's not only best for Green Bay, I think that's probably best for Devondre at this point as well. Just seems like one of those things that kind of needs to get taken care of, and we'll see if Green Bay ultimately does that. But that is step one. Release David Bakhtiari, release Royce Newman, and release Devondre Campbell. There is one contract extension that I would love to get done. That is next on my list of things to do. And we are going to extend Aaron Jones 1 year. We're going to extend him 1 year. I've seen some like, oh, could they release him? I've seen some, how can they get a pay cut? Are they going to do some sort of restructure? I want to set this up so that Aaron Jones ends up getting paid less this year, but he gets some guarantees to be back on the team next year, which he doesn't have right now. And that would be a benefit to Aaron Jones that he would get to stay a Packer, not only in 2024, but in 2025 as well, that he's already going to get guaranteed money going into his age 31 season. Doesn't have to be exorbitant, but it's a way for him to make up some of the cost savings of what he'd be taking as a potential pay cut right now. And there is a possible win there for both sides where Jones's cap number comes down. He gets some guaranteed money next year that he wouldn't necessarily get on the open market. I think there's ways to make that work. And I would love it so that Aaron Jones, we don't have to go through this whole situation next year again, and that Aaron Jones would be a Packer in 2024 and in 2025. And then you could readdress things in 2026. So extending Aaron Jones, getting him on the contract for another year in 2025, and bringing that current contract down in 2024. Then we need to talk about re-signing some of the Packers' own players. And there are four players in this scenario that I am going to re-sign for Green Bay. And I want to spend the most of the, we're not going to spend a ton of time on this, but the most of this time on the first player. And that is John Runyon Jr. And I brought this up the other day, and I talked about why I would bring him back. So I'm not going to spend a whole spiel on it here. But the reason that I think this makes sense, I've talked about if you get into a situation where you're down an offensive lineman, that you don't want to be in that situation where an Alex Light or a Don Barclay or a Jason Spriggs or a Kyle Murphy or a Byron Bell, or you get the point that you don't want them having to come in and everything is just ruined because you've got a turnstile at one of your offensive line spots and everything is just ruined and Jordan Love's eyes come down and receivers can't get the ball downfield because the quarterback doesn't have enough time and Aaron Jones doesn't have anywhere to run. One of those can sort of tank everything else. You don't want to be in that position. And simply by bringing John Runyon Jr. back, number one, it gives a legitimate starting competition between Sean Ryan and John Runyon Jr. If your prerogative is that you would just like Sean Ryan to win that job because he's younger, third round pick, cheaper, and is going to be on the team longer, yeah, I'm with you, but make him earn it. Don't just say, well, we're just going to give it to you because we're hoping things are going to go well. Have him compete with John Runyon Jr. And if Sean Ryan is better, awesome. That is great news. But if he's not, and if he doesn't take a step, or if he takes a step back, even worse, right? You don't want that spot already being there with your five starters, not to mention not having any depth. So you'd want John Runyon Jr. in that situation. But let's even assume, all right, Rashid Walker, Elgton Jenkins, Josh Myers, Sean Ryan, and Zach Tom are all good to go. They're all going to be really good starters next year. What John Runyon Jr. allows you to do as that sixth offensive lineman, because of who you have on your roster, is basically fill him in almost no matter what. Clearly, if Sean Ryan goes down, John Runyon Jr. steps in. If Josh Myers goes down, you could have John Runyon Jr. step in. He has cross-trained at that position for that exact specific scenario if and when it took place. So you could just put John Runyon Jr. there, or you could move Elgton Jenkins into center, who was a college center and has had some snaps at center in the past, and put John Runyon Jr. at left guard. So that's an option as well. If your left guard goes out, which is Elgton Jenkins, if he goes out, John Runyon Jr., who has started plenty of games at left guard in the past. So those are taken care of. What about if Rashid Walker goes down? Well, Elgton Jenkins has played left tackle in the past. You could put Elgton Jenkins out at left tackle with John Runyon Jr. at left guard. And the same thing if Zach Tom goes down, you could put Elgton Jenkins at right tackle with John Runyon Jr. at left guard there. And I don't think anyone wants to move Elgton Jenkins around. I don't think anyone really wants to move Zach Tom around. But no matter what happens, if Bakhtiari is cut, if Yosh Nijman is gone in free agency, if you don't find a free agent that you think is worth spending on, if you don't find the draft picks, or you do spend some draft picks, but they're just not ready to play in year one, you at least have six capable offensive linemen that are ready to go in, ready to start, that prove themselves that they could play cohesive, really good offensive line play a season ago. Not great, but really good. And you have flexibility there because of players like Zach Tom and Elgton Jenkins that they can play multiple spots. and that John Runyon Jr. has some flexibility on the interior of that offensive line as well. That gives you the ability, like I said, if somebody gets hurt, to still field an offensive line that is competent at all five spots. And that is super important. So that is why he is, you could see he bleeds green and gold from his exit interview. I'm not saying he needs to start. I'm saying that he can compete with Sean Ryan. And even if he doesn't win that battle, you now have that one guy off the bench and you might need to maneuver some players around if it's an offensive tackle. And if you don't find an offensive, swing tackle that's capable of stepping in, but that is why I am bringing back John Runyon Jr. I'm also bringing back Tyler Davis, core special teams guy, number four tight end. I think that is a really good fit for Tyler Davis on a vet minimum deal. Corey Ballantyne, probably close to vet minimum. Love him as a back of the rotation corner. We saw him step in when needed. He can go in, play a starting caliber corner. Let me put that in a different way. He can start at corner and you're not completely, you know what, if he's in there. And that is a key thing for a number five or number six corner, not to mention the fact that he's a core special teams guy. That's exactly what you're looking for as a back of the roster, 52nd, 53rd guy, a player who can go in at his core position and it's not going to be a cluster. And in the meantime, he can be somebody that is playing on a variety of different special teams groups. I don't think he's going to break the bank. I think he's probably under $2 million on a one-year deal. And I'm glad to bring him back at that. And when he was in, when he did need to start, he was fine. Not great, not good, below average a little bit, but for the most part, fine. And I would be interested to see what he could do in this Jeff Hafley defense as well. And then the last one is Eric Wilson. I think it just makes sense. I know he's a little bit on the closer to 30 side, but I do think he's still a core special teamer. And you're going to need bodies at that linebacker position. And sort of quietly, Eric Wilson is a fifth linebacker, can actually play a little bit on defense. This is not an unmitigated nightmare. If he's in on defense, he can play a little bit. And you get a veteran, you get a legitimate veteran presence on special teams where he cares about it. He plays it really well. Probably a one-year vet minimum deal as well. Not anything that's super amazing here, but John Runyon Jr., Tyler Davis, Corey Ballantyne, and Eric Wilson are the four unrestricted free agents that I am bringing back. I'm just going to say it goes without saying I'm bringing back all the exclusive rights free agents. Those are just no-brainer decisions anyway, but in case you were wondering, we will do that as well. Free agent signings. We are going to go into free agency, and here's what we're going to do. We're going to sign four players in free agency. I've talked about all four of these players on recent episodes. We are going to start, and if you're worried about realism here and don't think that this is within the realm of possibility, I will say number one, I very much think it's within the realm of possibility. And number two, if it's not, I will address it at the end of this episode. So stick around for that. But I am going with Xavier McKinney. I think Green Bay has the ability to make one splash free agent signing and probably a couple, mid to low tier free agent signings. Xavier McKinney would be that splash free agent signing. The projection right now per PFF is $13.5 million per year. It's going to probably be a four-year deal. The longer the deal, the more you can backload it, the more you can prorate it, the more you can do a variety of different things to get the heft of that deal in the back end of it. And I'm cool with that because the cap is going to continue to go up. You've got some young talent on this roster. And I think that Xavier McKinney would be a game changer for this Packers defense under Jeff Hafley. He's exactly what they need at that post safety. And I think it legitimately gives somebody on the back end of that defense that Jeff Hafley can count on and really make this new defense that he wants to run work at a much higher level. I'm not stopping there at safety though. I'm also adding Jordan Fuller. And the thing about McKinney and Fuller is, while I think in this situation, you're going to want McKinney as your post safety, Fuller as your box safety, and there's really no question about it, that's how you're going to want them. Fuller can play post safety and McKinney can play box safety. And what that allows you to do is disguise things a lot better. If you're playing the same guy at the post safety every time and the same guy as the box safety every single time, it's fine. It's not the end of the world, but it's a tell. And teams are going to pick up on that and they're going to know exactly what you're going to do, regardless of where they line up pre-snap. But the fact that they would have the versatility to play either of those positions, and even if it's 70-30 McKinney in the post and 70-30 Fuller in the box, that's fine. But at least you have that illusion of, hey, they could do anything at any given time and you're not exactly sure what you are going to get. But I love how those two would pair together. So I'm going Xavier McKinney and Jordan Fuller. McKinney, the key free agent signing. Jordan Fuller, more of that mid-tier free agent signing. I'm going with Blake Cashman. I mentioned this the other day, but the thing I like about Cashman is I do think there's upside here for him to be a legitimate starting off, you know, off-ball linebacker. I think he would pair well with Quay Walker, probably more of an early down backer, but he did play well in coverage a season ago. But here's the thing, $4 million per year type contract, can backload a little of it. I'm not super concerned about the cost here. And even if he doesn't turn out as a linebacker, when he's probably at worst a number three or number four guy, even if things don't go according to plan. But even that, set that aside for a moment, he will absolutely be a core special teamer. No question about it. Very, very good special teams player. So that adds the value there too. That's why I want to pick him up. You get a big time special teamer for Rich Bisaccia, which let's not forget, this special team still needs a significant amount of work. And I think you have a fun tag team partner with Quay Walker as off-ball linebacker. So I'm going to go there with Blake Cashman. And then another name that I mentioned the other day in the running back episode, I'm picking up Antonio Gibson. 1 year, $2.5-ish million deal, $2 million, $3 million, somewhere in that range. That to me is a great deal for Antonio Gibson. Get someone with a little bit more juice, a little bit more playmaking. He's been much better in pass protection, can catch the ball out of the backfield, can do a little bit of kick returning. Hated how Washington used him. I would love him as a backup to Aaron Jones in Green Bay. Does have, you know, kind of everything that Green Bay likes to look for at running back and a lot of athleticism as well. I think he'd be a great fit in the Matt LaFleur offense. And it gives Green Bay in this situation a little bit of a playmaker that they didn't have with AJ Dillon. It gives them another option and it allows you to go into the draft like not having to have another running back. Like you don't have to go in on, you know, day one or day two and be like, well, we got to find a way to get a running back. You can kind of address that a little bit later. And if you have to go into camp with, you know, Emmanuel Wilson, Antonio Gibson, Aaron Jones, and, you know, a couple late round picks, you feel better about that because you now have Antonio Gibson in tow. So Xavier McKinney, Jordan Fuller, Blake Cashman, and Antonio Gibson are the signings here. The cost there is about $25 million per year. Yes, I believe Green Bay does have the means and ability and cap space. Might need to do a couple other restructures, but they absolutely can do that. Going to have to backdate Xavier McKinney a little bit and make that contract be a little bit more in future seasons. That's okay because he's still young and super talented, should still be really good towards the end of that deal. So I have no issue with that. And again, if you're thinking maybe that's too much money to spend or Xavier McKinney is not realistic, or even if it is realistic, but at the end, some other team is just like, you know, Green Bay makes the $14 million a year offer and some other team just says, screw that, here's $18 million. And Green Bay's just like, all right, well, we're out. That could happen. And so let's say Xavier McKinney's off the board. I will have another option for you a little bit later. But McKinney, Fuller, Cashman, and Gibson are my four free agent signings. And yes, like I said, I do believe they can afford it if they wanted to go in that direction. Here's my draft. I will say this once and I will be done. Don't get super fixated on the names. All right. I've studied some of these guys. I haven't studied all of these guys. If there's a different player at a different spot in the draft that you want to add, that is fine. That is not the key to this exercise. We're not going to predict every draft pick right here, but I do think this would be a good start. I looked at obviously some high-end athletes, some positions of need, some players I think would fit in Green Bay. And this is what I came up with. You get pick 25, Cooper DeJean. I didn't want to make this pick because it's just so the cliche pick at this point, but he's sitting out there. And what's the one thing that, you know, we really haven't addressed yet? That slot corner spot. Cooper DeJean is going to slot in, no pun intended, to that slot corner role. You've got Jair and Valentine on the outside. You've still got Eric Stokes. Now you've got DeJean in the slot. Two more big-time safeties in Xavier McKinney and Jordan Fuller, and now you are cooking on the back end of that defense. You got Blake Cashman at linebacker. You've still got your talented defensive line, Rashawn Gary, LVN, Preston Smith, and whew, how does that defense sound? We are not done yet. Pick 41, Edgerrin Cooper, linebacker, Texas A&M, 9.34 relative athletic score. Let's get another playmaker at that linebacker spot, somebody with some athleticism and some speed. You pair that with Quay Walker. We've seen these attacking style defenses that usually have fast attacking linebackers. Green Bay now has a couple of them. They can pair that with Isaiah McDuffie and Blake Cashman as more of your under control sort of, you know, linebackers that are maybe going to be a little bit more, you know, sort of run defense guys and wrap up and tackle guys. But Edgerrin Cooper with Quay Walker and Blake Cashman and Isaiah McDuffie, that gives you a really strong group of four linebackers that you can go into the season with. And if you thought we're stopping at defense there, we are not. The next one is Braden Fisk, defensive tackle for Florida State, pick 58 overall, 9.88 relative athletic score. Defensive line, not necessarily a huge need here, but you can never get enough of those guys. Defensive line play is going to be massive for this new Jeff Hafley defense. It's massive for every defense. But I think now you've got a Kenny Clark and TJ Slayton at the nose. You've got Devontae Wyatt. You've got Fisk. You've got Carl Brooks. You have a rotation of really fun options. That's not even including Colby Wooden as well. I love that, and I'm not going to pass up on a high-end defensive line prospect. It's really, really hard to find good defensive linemen right now, even in the draft, even in free agency. So if you have the opportunity to get one, you take one, and we take one here at pick 58. Pick 88, you need to start addressing that offensive line. Kieran, I'm going to really get this name wrong, but I apologize. Offensive tackle out of Yale, did not do all the athletic testing, so does not have an RAS yet. But he could be that fit. We know Green Bay likes to take offensive tackles and then maybe transition them into other positions. But that could be a pick at pick 88. Pick 91, Jaden Hicks, safety out of Washington State. Also did not test yet, so we don't have a relative athletic score. You might say, Andy, you already got Fuller and you already got Xavier McKinney. Do you really need it? Yeah, because you still want to go young there and you want, like, maybe Fuller could be a 1 or 2 year guy, right? So you want guys like a Jaden Hicks that maybe in a year or two could step into that starting role and take that over seamlessly from a guy like Jordan Fuller. Next up, pick 129. We're going to stick on the offensive line. Tanner Bartolini, interior offensive lineman from Wisconsin, 9.79 relative athletic score, stays in the state of Wisconsin. I know you guys are going to love that because everyone loves Wisconsin Badger picks for the Packers, but pick 129, you get a highly athletic interior offensive lineman. Pick 169, we're staying on the offensive line. Garrett Greenfield, offensive tackle, South Dakota State, 8.36 relative athletic score. Pick 204, we're going to go back to the defense. We find a defensive end, Miles Cole, defensive end from Texas Tech, 9.96 relative athletic score. And you might be thinking, Andy, those are fine picks, but you haven't even done any running backs yet. Well, we're about to change that. The next three picks, all running backs. Kamani Vidal, running back from Troy, 8.84 relative athletic score. Kendall Milton, running back from Georgia, 8.68 relative athletic score. And Kylan Robinson, running back Texas, 7.58 relative athletic score. We are hoping to hit on one of those classic late round running backs. I don't need three to hit. I don't need two to hit. If one out of those three hit, I feel pretty good about it. You get some high end upside there, some good athleticism, some players at Georgia and Texas that didn't get huge opportunities. I'm good. I'm cool with that. Trying to find some of those guys late in the draft. And listen, the draft isn't always going to go exactly the way that you want. Would I have liked a running back earlier? Yes. Would I have liked another corner? Yes. Would I have liked some other things to go different ways? Yes. It didn't go that way when I did the mock draft simulator. So I did it the way that I could based on the picks that were available. After my draft is done, I'm going to look at my roster and be like, oh yeah, we have one more thing to get done. We're going to get that Jordan Love contract done. We are going to sign him to a 5-year, we'll say $240 million deal. I think it's probably 250, but we'll say 240 for the benefit of this exercise for the perfect Packers offseason. It's a little bit less, and that's going to be on top of the contract that he's already on for this year. So it's even a little bit cheaper if you think of it as a 6-year contract, but 5-year, $240 million extension. And we are making sure that Jordan Love is going to remain a Packer for the foreseeable future. In this exercise, here is our 53-man roster because nobody's going to get hurt in our perfect Packers offseason. So here is our perfect 53-man roster based on all of our additions and subtractions today. At quarterback, you've got Jordan Love and Sean Clifford. At running back, you've got Aaron Jones, Antonio Gibson, and then two of the following. So you get to keep two, Emmanuel Wilson, and then the three guys that we took in the seventh round, Vidal, Milton, and Robinson. So you're just looking for two to make the team out of that group of four, and you're happy to develop a couple of those guys while you still have Aaron Jones and Antonio Gibson on the roster. Wide receiver, Watson, Dobbs, Reed, Wicks, Melton, and Malik Heath. Tight end, you've got Luke Musgrave, Tucker Kraft, Ben Sims, and then Tyler Davis back. Offensive tackle, Rashid Walker, Zach Tom, Kieran Amagadiji, Luke Tenuta, and Garrett Greenfield. Guard, or interior offensive line, I should say, Elton Jenkins, Sean Ryan, John Runyon Jr., Josh Myers, and Tanner Bartolini. Interior defensive line, Kenny Clark, TJ Slayton, Devontae Wyatt, Carl Brooks, Colby Wooden, and Braden Fisk. On the edge, you've got Rashawn Gary, Preston Smith, LVN, and Miles Cole. You also have Kingsley and Igbari that will be on the pup list. And we're going to get Brenton Cox back on the practice squad as well because everything's going to go according to plan. Off-ball linebacker, you've got Quay Walker, Edrian Cooper, Blake Cashman, Isaiah McDuffie, and Eric Wilson. Corner, Jair Alexander, Carrington Valentine, Cooper DeJean, Eric Stokes, and Corey Ballantyne. At safety, Xavier McKinney, Jordan Fuller, Jaden Hicks, and Anthony Johnson Jr. Kicker, still Anders Carlson. Punter, Daniel Whalen. And long snapper, we are hosting a all-star battle royal of long snappers in training camp. We're going to have a massive competition. We're going to do a 16-man long snapping tournament, and whoever wins the 16-man long snapping tournament is going to win and will be your 2024 Packers long snapper. You got to go in a different direction than Orzek. He can compete in the 16-man over-the-top battle royal. That is fine. You can even give him maybe a slight, you can give him like a half of a pool cue to go in with, to give him maybe an advantage if you want. But to me, you have to have a competition at that spot. I'm not going to go through and do any scouting reports on undrafted free agent long snappers. If you'd like to do so, please be my guest and hit me up in the comments below with what undrafted long snapper Green Bay should sign to compete with Matt Orzek. But I think you hold an open competition there and see who ultimately wins. I mentioned I would talk about Xavier McKinney and say, like, all right, maybe McKinney's just too much, or they can't get him. Maybe the Giants sign him before free agency starts, whatever that may be. Or maybe they just can't fit all of those players in with the money that, you know, Green Bay really has, or doesn't, you know, or that they want to spend. Substitute Julian Blackmon in for Xavier McKinney. Cheaper, but it gets the same job done. Is it as good as Xavier McKinney? No, it's not. But can Julian Blackmon play there? Yes, he can. And I'm fine with Jordan Fuller and Julian Blackmon, with Jaden Hicks and Anthony Johnson Jr. at safety. So even if you need to take this back a step, Green Bay can't get Xavier McKinney, and they have to settle for a Julian Blackmon at that spot or a Cameron Curl at that spot, I can live with that. Even if it's Alohi Gilman at that spot, even a lesser tier, I can live with that. This is still, to me, a very successful offseason. Now, there are concerns here. I didn't address running back the way that I would have liked. I would have liked to have had Aaron Jones, Antonio Gibson, and a, you know, day two or early day three, like a third or fourth round pick at running back. Instead, we had to settle for 3 7th round picks. Offensive line depth. Yeah, it's great. We got three offensive linemen in the draft. Pick 88, pick 129, pick 169. We addressed offensive line in three different spots. We were able to bring back John Runyon Jr. That was great. We did some things here, but I would have probably liked to have had one more veteran along that offensive line to give a little bit more depth. Just didn't happen that way. I would have probably liked one more piece at corner, probably a young piece, probably like a third or fourth round pick. You got Jair, Valentine, DeJean. You've got Eric Stokes and Corey Ballantyne as your core backups. That's probably not enough. The truth here is, even if you have four really nice free agent signings, even if you have a really nice 11-person draft, it's not going to be perfect. You're not going to have this perfect ultimate team that's just going to be ready to take on the world and go 17-0 and go on a run through the playoffs and Super Bowl. I love what we did here today. I think the free agency makes sense. I think the releases make sense. I think the Love contract makes sense. The draft, give or take, whatever picks, we all have our own flavor of prospects. And like I said, haven't even watched all those guys yet. It's just trying to go through and simulate what a potential draft could be to fill some of those spots out. But overall, I like the state of this team. I like where it's at. And the overall exercise here is to show, one, I think Green Bay is going to be active this offseason. Two, it should be an extremely fun offseason. And three, with some money to spend in free agency and 11 draft picks, it might not be perfect, but Brian Gutekunst has a ton of opportunity to really even add more young, exciting talent to this roster in 2024 after having a pretty epic 2023. I hope you enjoyed this episode and exercise, or epic size, if you want to combine them into one. Hope you enjoyed it. I always enjoy doing this stuff with you guys. I will be right back here tomorrow with an all-new episode. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shea Bradad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donna Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Bremen, and David Prendergast. Appreciate you guys a ton. I will see you soon, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.